The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, today on Lulz, Brick and I are going to cover a ton of different topics. The IP rights to DFS projections, how does that work? We'll touch base on some of the Tom Dwan stuff we briefly touched on last week. There's been some updates with that as he's done a few interviews. Also, my new best ball video is out, which is essentially a response to Brick and Davis's podcast where Brick talked about scrolling down being the new meta. We'll expand on that. And we also have a tease of a new tool Brian is going to be releasing shortly for all of you best ball players out there. It's Lulz. Let's get to it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, Brian, before we even talk anything, I'm trying to up my game on moving these pint glasses, right? Because last week we had Nerdy Tenor buy one. And now today I said, you know what? I'm bringing my Lulz pint glass down here. You can see the ice cubes. And I, you know, normally on my breakfast, they get a little coffee pour. They're going to get an afternoon seltzer pour that I'm going to drink out of this sturdy, incredibly American-sourced pint glass here that everyone needs to buy from the store.
You should have. I have my coffee mug, Lulz, in the other room. You should have told me this bit was happening.
I'm could
have matched you. I could have poured my Propel in a coffee mug.
Oh man, seltzer just tastes better coming out of a Lulz mug. All the toxicity has been removed. Zero calories, zero toxicity. Seltzer out of a Lulz.
Guaranteed
mug.
To dupe less.
There it is. I need to hire you to do my copy on the merch descriptions. Yeah, lots to get into today. I feel like we could start with what just started to break on Twitter a little bit. Tom Kennedy over at Stochastic. I'll pull up his tweet here. But basically, kind of confirming something we've talked about on the show before, that people are, you know, quote unquote, stealing projections and then either repurposing them, aggregating them, calling them their own. And this is kind of an interesting gray area within the DFS space, because we've talked about pros aggregating projections for a long time. Of course, that's for personal use and not trying to sell them as their own. As I get this tweet pulled up, do you have any thoughts on sites and what do they actually own when it comes to their numbers and projections?
I do, yeah. And before we continue, though, this show is entertainment purposes only. We are purely speculating, so don't sue us or dupe us. I think I said 2-3 years ago, my guess is a lot of the smaller sites were just aggregating the bigger sites' data and maybe putting like a little rand, you know, an equals rand in Excel to make it a little bit different,
right,
at the end of the aggregation. And the smart ones you'd think would be like, oh, I think this one guy's off, you know, and then change a few of them. But that was kind of always my guess. And it looks like Stochastic's kind of sick of it.
Yeah, I can read this tweet quickly here from Tom Kennedy at TomJK321 on X. I recently became aware of certain sites that are violating our intellectual property rights and want to address this so our position is clear to everyone. Accurate projections data is what we're known for, and it's at the core of what we do. We've invested a massive amount of resources into our models and simulations to get them to that point. It's frustrating to see our work repurposed without permission as industry aggregates, in quotes there, which undermines the effort we put in and violates intellectual property rights. We're not keen on litigation, which is why I'm a recovering attorney, but we fully committed to protecting our work and investment. We'll be reaching out to certain sites individually to address our concerns directly. But if anyone else thinks it is okay to take our data and repackage it as your own product, we hope this prompts a reconsideration of practices where fair play and respect are standard. And then I also saw in the replies, Tom offered a $100 bounty to anyone who can show him other people or sites who are using their data this way.
Hmm. Yeah, this seems to me like a precursor to a sound lawsuit, right? Like, I warned you publicly, I warned you privately, et cetera.
How, I guess my initial question, I guess there's two parts. There is the part of, you know, do you own numbers? If your projections are, say you're pulling from, I don't know, an odds screener or a sportsbook's numbers that inform your projections, is that fair play? In a way, aren't you aggregating and massaging other market data when you create projections?
Hmm. It's not used for the same purpose, though. You're not direct competitors. I see what you're saying, though. Yeah, like if the line is minus 125 at 30, you just put 30.75.
Right.
And you didn't come up with that. You know, DraftKings came up with it. I mean, and DraftKings rips off, you know, Pinnacle. And so, like, there's a whole bunch of copying going on down the line. I can't, you know, Chan Zero's in the chat. What is that? What does that mean? Because he owns his own sim site. What is that? Does that mean, like, you don't buy it? Or are they claiming that you guys are copying them or what? What does that mean?
Please translate this for us.
Yeah, we don't speak binary.
And then I guess the second part where my head goes with this stuff is, how would you possibly enforce this outside of, you could block a subscription. Maybe you're able to kind of track IP address and know, hey, it's this individual, so we're going to make sure they don't have a sub to our site. But how, even if someone presented you a set of aggregated data, Brian, like almost as just like a data thought experiment, would you be able to suss out if your projections were part of the final aggregated number?
Depends on how big of a donkey they are. If they're a big donkey, all you'd have to do is just put a couple clear miss projections or ownership, mispriced or misvalued projected, and then they'll just copy and paste directly for the most part. And so, like, even small changes won't be able to hide it, you know, like, whatever, today's the players, start of the players for the PGA, you just put, I don't know, you know, Brendan Todd at 40% own, which is, you know, never going to happen. But if they're a complete donkey, they just copy and paste it in there.
Right.
I would think that'd be evidence, but, like, as Tom would know better than we do, I bet convincing a judge and, like, the legality of all that and then the cost of having to go through all that litigation just to be, like, just to make a case that, you know, what percentage of judges are going to understand this industry and the nuance in it, like, going to be rough, which is probably why he's playing this public game. It's just cheaper to just, you know, even though you want to punish people from stealing your content, just, like, maybe shame them and they'll stop doing it.
Yeah. And it's almost similar to, like, another example would be, like, gated content. Let's separate it from projections. You know, it, like, something that happens in the space, right? Like, I have seen, you know, private unlisted links from ETR premium shows that are just, they're not actually gated by anything other than the link is only shared with people behind a gate, but then that link can be shared outside of the gate. Like, that kind of stuff happens a lot. I see their links to their Friday show being shared in certain spots. I'm sure that they don't like that. How you would ever actually stop that from happening without overhauling your tech and how you distribute that stuff, I don't know. But I guess like in general, this practice of, you know, premium information becoming non-premium is pretty widespread. And then on top of that, like part of the services that are being provided, it's almost, I'm not saying begging for this to happen, but you're providing CSVs, you're providing downloads. You're basically saying, here's our data, go do with it what you will. Like it is really easy to take a provided data set and then go manipulate it however you see fit. I'm not saying it's right, to then repurpose it for your own, but I'm just saying like it is very easy to do so.
I think you're convincing me. I'm thinking like this might fall and you know, what do I know? I'm not a judge or a lawyer, but it probably falls under the morally wrong, but legally probably nothing you can, not much you could do about it. Like, cause like, even if you put under your terms and services, like you should, you can use this, but you can't publicly, you know, resell it or repackage it or something. Like if you catch a user doing that, really probably the only thing you could do is ban them, you know?
Right.
I doubt you really have much, but maybe not. And then especially if they do any manipulation at all, like I said, I bet some over the years, some of these guys were just straight up donkeys and cutting and pasting.
Right.
To save, you know, just doing no work at all. But like if you do, you know, I mean, I don't know. To me, it just seems like you're kicking the guy out of your bar, you know, or whatever, your private, your business. Like that's your recourse. And you're going to be wasting a lot of money. I mean, he is a lawyer, though. Maybe he can fill out all the paperwork. I don't know.
What do you, as far as like, again, thinking about it through a different angle of just the juice being worth the squeeze, like how much time and effort is it worth it to police this stuff? Say a major competitor, I won't even say a site's name, but just enter a really big DFS site was part of this. That's an issue, right? Because they are a direct competitor for you. What if it is someone who has 50 DFS subs, 100 subs, 150? You know, are they actually stealing market share from you? And then is it actually worth going after it on principle alone?
It has to be a big site, I would guess, where you could get your legal fees paid for plus restitution. In a site that has 50 subs, you're not getting – they could just fold. If it ever got to that point. My guess is it's more than one site.
Yeah. And some people in the Lulz channel, I'd actually never heard, by the way, if you guys want to join us in the Deposit Kingdom Discord, we have a Lulz, channel where you can talk about stuff on the show. And Cubs fan shared a screenshot to a site I had never heard of called True DFS Membership. Their tagline is True DFS is the only site combining all projections from leading sources across the industry aggregated in one place, which is like a brazen way to tell on yourself.
Oops. Wow. Do we know True DFS?
I had not heard of them until I saw them posted in this this account.
I've heard of them. I can't remember who owns them though.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, that's our guy.
That's our guy? No, sorry. What's his name again?
Ehabs or MB Habs is his screen name.
Yeah.
Sheets.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's been doing well too.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I thought we had enough to unpack with the State King stuff last time, and we weren't even getting the real good stuff.
Are we promoting IP theft, Pete?
Good God, I'm going to get it off the screen. Yeah. So let's not get too sidetracked here. But I just don't know how you go about, even if you know for a fact that this site is using your projection set as a data point in their aggregated projections, and then they're selling that. I mean, other than you have to do a phishing operations, like you said, right? And you catch them multiple times with the dummy thing, and then what, you build up a kind of a war chest of proof and then go and say, this has been occurring multiple times?
Yeah. You could you can get tricky with it. Like,
yeah,
this is the average of ETR you know, in ours for sure. Like, here's ETRs that day, here's ours, and here's their projection. And we purposely moved up Siwoo Kim 30 percentage points just to for a few hours. The problem with that, doing that too, another like a side of it's like we're paying customers for their projections. Like, you can only like release shitty projections for so long before you're screwing over your own subscribers. So it's a tough one.
Well, what about this? So the chat is mentioning something, and I think I would like to make a distinction between projections versus ownership projections. But maybe that distinction shouldn't be made, because it is pretty well known practice that lots of sites, I would say, wouldn't you say to have really good ownership projections, you would want to be including some kind of market aggregate as part of yours?
Sure. Yeah. But they don't have to.
Yeah.
I think what some of these guys do is they go and then they look at ETRs and then see if there's any big discrepancies and then probably manually adjust.
Right.
Or vice
versa. Which is also a funny thing just in practice, where there with ownership projections, there's the snake eating its own tail dynamic, where everyone's trying to aggregate toward a universal ownership, projected ownership that then wills that ownership into existence because everyone is playing off of that same thing, where it actually would be more valuable if you were in the weeds making your own ownership projections, as you always say with any set of projections, right? If you can make unique projections that are good, that's the best possible thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the projections, not the ownership, the stat projections, they're making that from the bottom up, because it's really, especially in the NBA, is kind of really the important one, probably the easiest one to catch someone else doing, because it's just like last minute news.
Right.
And so, like, if you're cheating or if you're copying other people's stuff and it's so fast, you don't have time to put in some changes to make it look like you're not directly copying.
Yeah.
And like, you really do need kind of like a bottom up approach. I mean, I guess usually there's enough time where you could just copy somebody's and then make a few changes. But man, they're in a rock and a hard place. It's hard to prove, probably not enough money to get back. There's not much you could do.
And I mean, this stuff plays out in lots of different industries. I mean, the music industry is certainly one, you know, where they're like, hey, this riff was in my song and then you used it for yours. And then if it falls under, you know, the realm of it being remixed in a way, or there are tweaks, then it's fair game with that. So it would be really interesting to see like what precedent could actually get set in a case involving this stuff, as far as what is unique, what do you own, and what, once it's been remixed, is now not yours, essentially.
I wonder if they could block people, you know, like just try to figure out whose emails associated with it and just start blocking people, make them sign up again, you know. And
what I know, you can't do this when you're a big site and you have tons of paying subs and there's so much money being had, but it would be really fun to do the nuclear experiment, which is, oops, we didn't post our projections today, and then go to that site and see if theirs aren't coming.
Right.
That would be the fun one.
Right.
But you would have an army of subs with pitchforks.
Yeah. Well, you could put the CSV in your Discord.
Yeah.
And then the users can download it there, but you're going to still piss off a lot of people who aren't in your Discord. It's too hard. You know what the like adult outcome I think would be, is the sites that are copying them, just charge them a site fee, you know, like instead of whatever it is for a user, you know, double it or triple it, you know, like, just give us $500 a month and you could use our data. You know, whatever. I don't know what a fair price is. I'm just making up numbers, but something like that.
That is a really – it's almost like what PFF does with their data, right? They have huge licensing deals with NFL organizations where they charge them ungodly amounts of money for that. And then they have the pared down version that fantasy analysts could buy, and like different tiers of it, because no fantasy analyst is spending $25,000 a year to license all of their data to run an organization/fantasy site. Like, so that would be an interesting model of just saying, hey, we know this is happening. Let's actually make it worth your while. You pay us this. We'll set you up an even cleaner API to port our projections over to you. And we all win here. We get paid extra and it's actually easier. And we bring it out from the veil of secrecy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you make it a price where it's makes more sense for them to do that than to steal it and like fight a lawsuit or something or.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's probably hopefully where that goes, but actually, no, I hope it goes into a big, controversial Twitter war and we can talk about it more. People start, you know, threatening boxing matches, head-to-head challenges. I hope that's where it goes for content.
Yeah. And I guess the issue and why it is obviously so slimy, right? Because you think about, and I understand why Stokastic is pissed, right? Because when you look around the industry, certain sites bring different value adds and good sites do all of those things well. They have really good projections. They have entertaining personalities. They have great content, good tools. That's obviously like the gold standard or whatever, but everyone has different skill sets. Sites have different skill sets, things they do better. I don't think anyone would argue that Stokastic's strongest skill set is how good their projections are. So if that's what, you know, butters your bread, you know, you're going to want to protect that as much as possible. Whereas it's like, oh, you make this incredible content. This show is so valuable. It's like, okay, you can try to knock off our show format, but if you don't have our intelligence or our entertainment value, then like, you're not even going to be able to replicate that, but you can actually take someone's numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most likely outcome here is they're just going to continue to take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beachhead, I can't tell if he's joking. I'm assuming that's probably a joke. But could you imagine, you know, the Department of DFS projections and ownership? How incompetent
It
would be if they regulated and taxed it.
Yeah, Chan Zero says there's easier ways to fingerprint each individual files for each user. You can make unique copies for each projection file with a unique fingerprint. It's what big companies do to catch moles with emails, docs, but doubt Stokastic and other sites have the resources or ability to do that. Yeah, that would probably be a pretty expensive overhaul to how you kind of disseminate your data.
Yeah. If they had like an API or something, they could probably do it that way. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm sure they're thinking about a bunch of different ways.
And I think too, here's another, and hopefully more of these sites actually get outed, because it would be really interesting to know where it really, really gets slimy, right? Is if they are talking about their, you know, award-winning or industry-winning projections. Like if they are actually trying to sell that sub because of the projections, or is that just something like, hey, having projections for a DFS site is just table stakes for getting subs, and I'm just doing content and write-ups and videos. And to get people in the door, I also need to offer this. And so I'm just going to like tack that on. Or are you actually trying to sell it as your own?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, I think if this got in front of a judge and you said, no, I aggregate multiple sites, I could see like 50-50 or even higher than the judge going, well, this isn't yours. This isn't a direct copy of yours. He's doing something else.
Right.
I could easily see that.
Yeah. And then even then, so like in the initial experiment we were talking about, right, where you throw them off with a fake number or whatever, then the judge is looking at two numbers that aren't even identical. It's just one's weighted closer to the other than the others. You know, that it's like, then how the fuck do you prove that?
I'm even saying they admit it. You know, right. These sites that are getting sued admit we are aggregating. And the judge even then would be 50-50 or greater. I have no clue, just speculating, but I could easily see them going, no, that's aggregating. It's a different number. Like, sorry, it's not yours anymore. I could easily see a judge just going, case dismissed. And then you just spent, you know, 50 legal hours or whatever getting to that point.
Yep. All right. I'm sure there'll be a little bit more fallout on this since this just kind of broke on Twitter and people are discussing it. And maybe we'll actually hear more about Stokastic's kind of public mission to try to, I don't know, eradicate some of this stuff. I did want to touch on Tom Dwan, Brian, because we were talking about that last week. We actually reached out to Peter Jetton, one of the guys accusing Tom of owing him large sums of money. He didn't respond to my DM. But since all of this unfolded, Tom Dwan has given, I believe, multiple interviews. I listened to the interview he gave on Poker News And I was enraged listening to that podcast.
It was frustrating. I listened to it as well after you told me. What a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. And again, for people who don't know, there's multiple people in the poker world, high profile guys, Jungle Man, Haralabob, this guy, Peter Jetton, who used to be his friend. All of their relationships with Dwan, I think, are slightly different. You know, Dwan had the heads up challenge with Jungle Man. That was a different thing. Jetton was part of like a staking deal. The Haralabob was when Dwan was bearding for him. So all of them are a little different, but there's a clear pattern of him owing these guys money. And what was so frustrating listening to that podcast, it was like he never said it wasn't true that he owed them money. He just basically said, I didn't like how they were handling it. And once they were being a jerk, I didn't actually feel like I owed them that much money. Was that not the essence of every one of his arguments?
That was exactly the essence. But you just coherently stated what would take him 15 minutes of blabbering and stuttering and going, you know what I mean? You know, like after, like, oh, well, you know, there's this thing about, you know how it goes, you know, and then like, well, should we, it didn't even make, like a lot of the ones didn't even make sense. And I was, the whole time I was thinking, like, why did he agree to do this if this was going to be how he handles it? Like, it made me like just think like the ego on this guy to think he was going to like PR handle this and this is how it went was like either that or he's dumb, but he's unlikely that he's dumb, right? It's unlikely he's dumb. He just thought I could go on here and, you know, I could tell him my side of the story and it'll clear all this up.
Yeah, and he was doing, with Haralabob and Jungle Man, he almost played it out as like, oh, you know, I've had some, you know, a phone call with Haralabob and we were joking around and, you know, Jungle Man, me and him, we're kind of simpatico. We both know that we're tough to deal with and it's all fun and games. And it's like, but they're publicly accusing you of owing a shit ton of money. Is like this just some performative art piece where you guys are just like having it out in front of people on X for fun? It's like, no, they actually seem like they would like to get paid what you owe them. And you're like, oh, don't worry. We kind of have an understanding of where we're at with stuff. And he knows he was a dick. So it's kind of cool that I haven't paid yet.
It was totally in there and weird. But then the Haralabob thing, that tweet he sent about – like insinuating Bob was betting while he was working for the Mavs.
Yeah, I should pull that up.
Is like way beyond cool.
Right.
To tweet that out. And like especially if what Bob's saying is true, which I assume most parties involved agree. I think even Tom agrees. You owe him $350,000. You're not paying him. You get mad that he publicly comes out and then you – and then you drop a nuke like this.
Yeah, this was the tweet that came out. It must have been like the day after our show last week. He publicly tags Haralabob, but puts the period in front so everyone can see it. Tom knows Twitter. Haralabob, how much action did you have on basketball while under contract with the Mavs? I wonder what contract and legal spots that could bring up. Does the same kind of stuff happen with your soccer team? Haralabob, obviously on to a Spanish soccer league where he's working now. I mean, that's a low blow from going, you owe me money to going to this extent.
Right. This is like jail time. I'm assuming.
Yeah. And I did.
It shouldn't be, by the way, but that's neither here nor there.
I think Haralabob had a tweet that someone grabbed the screenshot before he deleted it, but saying something about a libel suit that he would maybe look into for something like this.
The guy owes you $350,000. You're going to try to get more out of him from a libel suit. Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And this is, again, what is this a technique when you owe someone? It's not the dictionary definition of deflection. It's like, oh, let's shine something over here again. In a not address that you owe this person money.
We speculated, and again, this is all speculation, but we speculated last week that he must have some gambling problems, which is what's
yeah,
all this. But like maybe he's got other issues going on too, just from the way he handled all this so poorly. Like really smooth brain, decision making. going overboard on this. Same thing with the Jetton, going and publicly doing interviews where he looks guilty as hell. He's got no, like, no arguments that are coherent. If that, you know, that's even being generous. They, I think they made him look more guilty every step of the way. It seems like who's advising this guy? And he did eventually, you know, spoiler alert with Jetton, agree to arbitration maybe 6 hours after that interview, which makes me think, Pete, that somebody called him and knocked some sense into him.
Yeah. Also, I meant to, not to get distracted, but I guess this is part of it. Do you have any idea what this could have implied? Tom had a tweet saying, "Nice to have my Twitter back, LOL." Like, he was implying that he couldn't talk about this stuff, that he didn't have access to his Twitter account. I didn't know what that would have meant.
Yeah, I took it as like he forgot his password and didn't have his Twitter for the last year. Because like if you see like the tweet before the this whole thing was like a year old or something before all this. I mean, obviously, maybe you're right. I really have no idea. Yeah, so like September was his last tweet. And I thought it was like after he drops that nuke on Bob that it was also like saying, "Nice to have my Twitter back. I just fucking blew up the internet," you know, that kind of thing.
Even the way he writes, like, this is the tweet. So, you know, Peter, let's go to arbitration and find out. Or you could just pay the remaining and be done with it. Tom says, "Offer still stands. Why not our oldest mutual friend to arbitrate it?" And then he goes, this sentence is wild. "Would have arbitrated with just about anyone reasonable before you publicly lied so much. And you know that," which implies that he now wants to have it arbitrated by someone not reasonable.
yeah, right.
By anyone reasonable. No longer. Now I need an unreasonable arbitrator.
It also implies, I mean, he all of this stuff in the interviews and this imply he owes them.
Yes.
Like he's saying he owes them. He just doesn't like the way they handle it. So I'm not going to pay you because I don't like what you said. It is a different world, the high stakes loaning and stuff like that. So there is, you know, there is like unspoken rules and all sorts of stuff like that. But like clearly, and he did the interview like this too, like
I didn't even
underneath
see
his nose. It was still annoying.
This is the first I've seen it. I just listened to the audio. This is
ridiculous. I watched the visual. And I tweeted this out though, and you know, side note with Tom Dwan, he doesn't look a day older than when he first came on the scene in 2007 or whatever, 2006 on High Stakes.
He looks a little more strung out though.
He looks a little older, but he looks pretty good. I mean, he looks very similar.
There you go. Brian's, how do you prevent aging? It's not an elaborate skin routine. It's owing lots of people millions of dollars.
And he still owes Jungle Man.
Yeah. Wait, we got Andy in the chat. Dwan replies to your tweets, Andy. I love this. I didn't know Dwan followed you on Twitter. There you go. Congrats on the engagement. But yeah, now he's been tweeting up a storm. It's also telling to be like who's the reliable narrator? Has there been anyone coming forward in Dwan's camp of being like, this is a reputable guy? I've had dealings with him. Like guys like Bill Perkins, who for all I know has a great reputation in the poker space, has like free rolled lots of people on big bets, always seems to pay up, all of that stuff. Like no one seems to be caping up for him here.
That this text exchange is weird too. Bill Perkins, exactly zero. He'd bet you on that. No way he wouldn't. And he wouldn't bet him on that because Tom will never pay, I'm assuming. Is that what
exactly
he's saying?
Yeah.
And then Tom's on Annie up, buddy. It's like you owe all these people. What do you mean, Annie up? You're the first pay your debts, and then you can play then you can maybe play a game with an auntie. And then he does this thing. Could you text me like a normal person? I actually still think I like you though, even.
Well, and this was a popular refrain on the show. He's like, you know, why do these guys all go to Twitter? Why don't they just hit me up? Like, I'm totally cool and reasonable if you just hit me up over text. Like, we're buddies and we can kind of settle this, you know? And it's like, it seems like that didn't work for them and that they've escalated this to the court of public opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Like, 4 years later, whatever. It just makes me think he's got something wrong with him.
Yeah. And let's be honest. If you were to power rank, you know, sites within the poker world, as far as, you know, what it means reputation wise and to get the deals, like, you know, what are the, like, what's Negreanu sponsored with right now? Is it like,
he was GG Poker. I don't know anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, he's clearly, needing funds for the sponsorship, right? Because like he's been pretty, he did a deal, I believe, with that Triton, which was the high stakes poker abroad series. I know he had like a marketing deal with them back in the day because a lot of their games were based in Macau and stuff. But then going to ACR, it seems out of character for his, like what he does as a player. He's a high stakes guy. He's not grinding, you know, ACR cash games. Right. Like even giving the interview, it was like, I'm going to bring all these, you know, cool ideas to ACR, like a progressive squid tournament, whatever that means. Like it didn't add up as far as like part of his brand or whatever.
That's true. I didn't think of it that, cause I was thinking, do you want to be an ACR pro right now? They have a lot of like bot issues and allegations and, you know, an unregulated, I can't believe I'm saying unregulated, but an unregulated poker site specifically in this world, like, I don't know if I'd even play it, much less want to be a sponsor.
Right. Exactly. That's what I meant as far as a safe site to be associated with where you are going to catch some heat for things that happen on that
right, site. But you also said, which makes sense too, like that probably means he needs the money then.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But then it was like, okay, you know, does everyone, people were making jokes in his ACR announcement, just have ACR directly play Karlovac, Jungleman, instead of the direct deposit, and they'll take care of it.
Right.
But it's also like, it is weird if you're going to do what's a clear cash grab. And if it was aside from this debt stuff, it's like, whatever, go get your bag however you want. But it is weird to be like, all right, you know, some nice checks are starting to come in. And there's still lots of people out here who you owe money.
Right. Yeah. And obviously we're not shaming. I think the sponsorship deals are cool. Honestly, I think they're like, yeah, I think it's like an honor kind of, you know, right. There you go. Okay. There you go. So like, yeah, I'm definitely, I mean, and I wish the DFS sites would try to make the Tom Dwans of the world, you know, pump them up, make them, you know, make them seem like it's something that someone can achieve, you know, cause it clearly is. And it's, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum on this show, you know, have competitions between these guys. So yeah, we're all for it, but like, but that would be hilarious if they just directly paid him. I heard another one though, besides this sponsorship deal, was like, he won $1 million pot. I think Bob tweeted about it. He won like $1 million pot in front of him and still wouldn't pay him.
Yeah. Man.
What are you doing playing a game with a guy who owes you $350?
Well,
I guess if you lose that money to him, you can go like, just give me that directly back right now.
And
you're never going to see it anyways.
Even my guess is in that example, and who knows, this is just hypothesizing, that even if you wanted to give the money you just won, that money is already probably accounted for as part of another staking deal or some kind of someone has equity in that, to where it's like, it's not actually just my money to slide the chips over to you, because someone else has squatter rights on this money too. Because man, if I've learned one thing from listening to some of these interviews, like we were kind of talking about it last week, all of the different exchanging of money and arrangements. I mean, the amount of things that Tom was caught up in with what sounds like very little accounting, or at least hard, good accounting, is wild. I mean, money flying every which way. I can honestly see how there would be some gray areas, but I also think when you're talking about sums of money at that size, that these guys probably know exactly what they're owed.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's another thing with that interview, is like, he was kind of alluding to like, there was some other staking going on and he was staking other people and who really owes who, which is a valid argument if true. But he couldn't even like spit it out in a coherent way. Like there was three other guys who I staked. They were in on this Jet deal. So like it's not exactly – his numbers are not right, which is why I was so upset because I don't owe him nearly that much. Done. You know, whatever. And so like I do owe him, but not nearly that much. And I would go to arbitration, but now that he's lying about the number, this guy's not going to – you know, something like that. Like that makes some sense. But if anyone goes and watches that interview, you can see it's like – He was way overconfident in how he was going to handle this.
He uses the word spot a lot.
Oh my God, a lot.
In a very, it's almost like this catch-all like scapegoat term.
Yeah.
Where it can encompass so much. Where it's like, oh, well, this spot, as if there was so much ambiguity to what a spot meant. And I'm like, right. There have to be some hard numbers behind. You get X amount of dollars in exchange for X percentage of net profit or whatever it is. It's like, why does this spot sound like it's something you're negotiating in real time? That's how we use the word.
We could have reviewed that interview live on here, but we'd be stopping every 15 seconds and going like, that doesn't make any sense. He's babbling here. Why does he say spot every 10 seconds?
I can't remember the last time I got that mad listening to a piece of audio. Maybe it's because I normally listen to entertainment, vehicles, but that drove me crazy, that interview.
So was he actually like your kind of one of your idols or no? Was that all just straight bit?
No, that was like, and I wrote about this in my newsletter. It was just how I crossed paths with him. I had watched him when I was really into poker. Back in the day, but the whole things when he started crossing my paths was when Manz was spoof hunting him down. I wasn't like a fanboy or anything, okay. But I started making videos about him because the site I was working with, PokerTube, was like, dude, anything involving Tom Dwan in poker just gets insane amount of clicks because he's this super fun player. And now on top of it, there's all this mystery surrounding him. He's been kind of off the beaten path. He's hiding out in Macau. There's like, you can go read, if you search Tom Dwan triads, Tom Dwan, like mafia, you can find all these crazy conspiracy theories. And so I just started making those videos. And then in the newsletter, I explained how I ended up crossing paths with him. But yeah.
Cause your age range, I could see you're maybe a little too old, but like where I could see like that Tom Dwan would be like your poker guy, you know? It's probably more like Davis's age range.
Well, yeah, because if you think about, we talk about this all the time, right? With personalities, and it's actually interesting though, right? Because he's not like an Antonio Esfandiari, where he's this really interesting personality, both how he plays and his verbal game at the table, you know, not some like, you know, Phil Locke or these other guys who kind of came up with these huge personalities. His reputation was entirely carried based on his style of play, because you listen to him talk. It's not like he's some charismatic speaker or engaging. It's just that he was an action player, which is honestly impressive to get that level of celebrity exclusively to what you do on the felt.
I agree with you, action player, but also at that point in time, he was more of like a Bobby Fischer too, like true. A young online stud. And they'd say like he can learn, you know, I remember some old articles like he'll learn any game and within a week he's better than everyone else. So like people are intrigued by that, you know, young genius as well too. And he was definitely, they played him up on the, you know, the poker TV shows. And like back then, you know, there was not nearly as much media, and so like, and poker was huge
yeah.
back then. So like he was definitely the number one like media creation.
Yeah.
From that era.
Well, and because he was the guy that kind of, because before that it was all the old school guys, right? It's the Doyle Brunsons, the Howard Letterers, the old guard here. And he was the first guy to kind of buck that trend, partly because he was one of the first guys who was able to get amass a ton of volume online, where those other guys all cut their teeth with IRL poker.
I wonder how much of this is kind of he got too big too fast, was young, and this had like zero responsibility and like no reason to grow up or anything like that. And as far as I know, no kids, no wife, just traveling the world. And, you know, like he's not going to have the, I don't know what the word is, like the,
if you draft a lot on underdog,
firmest grasp of reality. Is that you playing something?
Oh, sorry, I was just getting a screen share. The other thing too is, I imagine for someone like him who's playing at the highest of stakes in poker, first on his own, and then when he was probably getting staked and playing in those games in Macau, I mean, those are probably some of the biggest poker games that have ever happened, those games in Macau. It has to be incredibly hard after you've gotten to chase that high and that adrenaline to basically do anything for any less amount of money. And that's probably been a tough pill to swallow. And then it's like, well, you owe money. Well, how do I win it back? Well, I go play in the world's biggest games. And then anything away from that, your kind of senses are now like dull to anything else, I would imagine.
And the game might have passed him by.
Yeah.
Like before, he could just go play, you know, 5,100 on Full Tilt or PokerStars or whatever. Obviously, you don't have Full Tilt. No, I guess he probably lives abroad, right? And so he probably could. But then he could just go and make, you know, 500K really easily, pay off some of his debts, and the sponsorship money was flowing, and et cetera, et cetera. Who cares if he owes $1 million to Bob? Like, that was probably easy to pay off. And then now I can't beat these games, like whether he went, you know, would want to admit it or not. Maybe he can, I don't know. But I imagine it's not so easy to beat high stakes online anymore.
And I bet if he thought he was plus EV against Jungle Man, I bet he'd be willing to finish the challenge. Like, you know, there's probably a reason that he doesn't want to finish those challenges either.
Right.
All right, let's talk a little best ball today. A couple things going. I just released my video that was a direct result of Brian and Davis on a fake lulz talking about scrolling the F down. And I said, you know what, Brian, that would make an awesome video to explore. So that just dropped today on the Deposit Kingdom YouTube channel. I'll drop that link in the chat. Brian, I know you got a chance to watch it. I was kind of like holding some of my thoughts to the vest just because I wanted to get them out in the video first, but now that they're out there, did you have any thoughts on the follow-up?
Yeah, I do, but why don't you kind of explain the video? Or
So, you know, Brian had, we've talked a lot about the scrolling the F down, and when the Badge Bros kind of coined that phrase, it resulted or was specific to the daily contest where there's just 6 rounds, 36 players are drafted. You're drafting these teams a day, maybe a couple of days before lock. I mean, potentially hours before lock if you're drafting on Sunday morning. And Brian brought up that this strategy, which has been proven to be successful in the dailies, could not only be applied to our season-long best ball drafts, but could be kind of the meta this year, the thing, the strategy that everyone gravitates to before everyone knows about it. And so I kind of wanted to just dig in, look at the differences and similarities between the strategy and the dailies, and then try to handpick what are the elements of it that work in the dailies that could be applied to the season-long stuff. Because what you found is around pick 165, 170, players in drafts start to be drafted at less than a 100% clip, which therefore can provide edge in selecting players that are not on everyone else's roster.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That sums it up. And your video sums it up nicely. And then I wanted to take that idea, plus Poker Tracker, which is old school poker heads up display where you get the data that you've from when you've played poker hands, and then you overlay and you can kind of get a feeling for how your opponents play and then adjust accordingly and kind of apply all that to best ball this year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're at now, where you could use this strategy and others to, you know, hopefully increase your edge. I think in the most obvious way that really people haven't talked about, and we probably shouldn't have talked about it, or, you know what I mean? The badge bros probably shouldn't have talked about it either, but now that it's out there, might as well make content on it and put it on the app.
Yeah, I pulled up one of the graphics here. This was when, you know, Brian pointed me in the direction. Underdog made the public or Underdog made the BBM4 data publicly available. So you can go see which percent drafted each player was in the contest. And so I just kind of summarized this into a little graph, roughly 100% through 168, 90%, 169 to 192, which is the equivalent of round 15 through 16, round 17 and 18 down to 65%. And then you really fall off of a cliff there, 26%. And then if you're scrolling all the way down after 250, you're going to be sub 3%. And I think one of my big takeaways and one of the kind of like the fine tuning, the point that I wanted to make was not thinking through scrolling down specifically through the lens of ADP, because that's just a specific point in time, but through the lens of how often has this player been drafted, and use kind of the illustration of, say, Puka Nacua last year, who mostly went undrafted. Say he got steamed up 2 weeks to go before the season started and he was a 14th round pick. You wouldn't want to say, hey, he's a fragile 14th round pick because of this ADP. You'd actually want to say, holy cow, he just started getting drafted. I actually don't even care. Like, even if he was a 7th round pick, he would still probably be a very good pick because he ended up closing at 30% ownership. So that was kind of the distinction I wanted to make. Less scroll down for ADP, scroll down for percent drafted.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a good point. You know, the main reason we were talking about that is because it was just easy. The data was already compiled by Underdog. So, but it's true that, like, you don't know, you know, when somebody is, you know, whatever, let's say 194th overall pick when you draft them, but how often were they taken through the whole year, which kind of sucks because you're going to have to guess, you're going to have to know ball a little bit throughout the year to guess which of these guys you're most interested in taking. And I will note that I don't think you mentioned this in the video, but definitely something to pay attention to is there's a big difference based on position.
Yes.
So tight ends and QBs in these later rounds are going to be drafted at a much higher frequency.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because you could see it in the, I'm pulling up a few charts here. If you guys are watching the video version of this, I pulled this up in the Battle Royale data where you can also see this reflected, where in this Battle Royale percent drafted, I have it spliced out by position and you can see the tight ends and the quarterbacks in the later rounds are drafted at a much higher frequency just because there aren't as many available options. When you think about it, like on a given week, there might be like 14 or 15 quarterbacks you want to use. Whereas there might be 50, 60 wide receivers who you could justifiably make a case for. So to me, that does track that the ownership is going to be naturally boosted. And when I did the team that I had in Battle Royale, if I can find that here, that was the case. Nico Collins and Tank Dell both had super late ADPs, but Tank was 5% and Dalton Schultz was 30%, because just naturally there was only like, you know, 10 tight ends people were selecting that week. So the 8th tight end, even though he's out of the 36 that normally get drafted, people are still completing stacks with him, just clicking him more just because of the available options.
Yep, definitely. And QB is obvious, right? Because there's 30 QBs and you're only competing against 12 teams. So you could just wait for your second or third QB till the last round and get Jared Goff or who knows, depending on the year. So someone who's definitely going to start.
Yeah.
Tight end stack completion is huge. But anyways, the point being, even those guys you could see are still not drafted as frequently in that rounds 35, 36. And you mentioned this in the video. This is the clearest reason to do it. The point projection is so close that if you think of it like a DFS player, it's ridiculous not to just scroll down a little bit. Take the guy 2 after, and then no one has him. It's like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I use this example, and it's funny because not this specific week, but there were lots of weeks where this hypothetical wide receiver 2 example was Tank Dell and Nico Collins, where they were priced very similarly. One had a slightly higher projection, normally Nico, and Nico would be like 35%, and Tank would be, you know, 6 or 7. And even a gap of 20%, DFS bros were like, dude, you can't play Nico at 35. You have to play Tank. And DFS bros understand that. And then it's like, well, what if you could go to Underdog and the gap in percentage was 95% instead of 20%.
It's crazy. Which, you know what this leads to is if you, speaking of copying people's projections, if you can get good season long projections, those are hard. Those are really hard to make. Yeah. That would be a good spot to then do this comparison and go whatever, you know, Nico Collins is projected for, I don't know, what's a realistic number, 200 points or something. And then Tank Dell's, not this year, obviously, but the year before. Tank Dell's projected for 125, you know, even though that might be significantly different. If one guy's getting drafted 20% of the time,
yeah,
that's a huge difference. So getting either knowing ball or getting good projections for the season long is going to be like really important to this strategy, because it's a lot. You have so much more information at 11 o'clock on a Sunday of week four than you do in April, you know, of the preseason.
Yeah. Yep. And I hit on that in the video, and I think I couldn't get this in the weeds on it, but another point to that, I think, goes back to the positional differences. One thing I noticed last year that I don't necessarily regret from a scroll down factor was the running backs. It's easier to project or understand kind of like the binary nature of their value. Like if you're a running back two versus a running back three, like it's such a massive difference. And so like I was selecting guys like Chuba Hubbard and Devin Singletary in a ton of drafts in that fragile territory, 15, 16 last year, but it was because of that information edge of like knowing these guys were the number two to a certain degree of confidence, obviously not 100%. Right. Whereas I think if you go to pass catchers, that's where you can really find some crazy bands where it's like, use the example of like Jameson Williams, who would be like going in the 10th. And then like, so he's the wide receiver three or the third on the target order. And then a Josh Reynolds or a Khalif Raymond. And those guys aren't even getting drafted whatsoever. And I think there's probably a little bit more fragility in projections when you're going down the depth chart at wide receiver than there is at running back, where it's like, hey, if you're next man up, like that, knowing that you could be next man up is worth so much versus if you're RB3, like you essentially have no value no matter what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. This is also like, I think, although this seems to be my answer all the time, is leads to a more balanced portfolio. And even though you should have no ball takes or good projections, don't overdo it. Don't go, you know, 80% Tank Dell, you know, in this, you know, scenario where we don't, not new Tank Dell, but when you don't have that information. And like you have to be okay with taking a bagel with this strategy, which sucks. We said this in that podcast too, though, like you're probably going to lose anyways. So scroll the F down, you know, was our saying in that podcast. And that's kind of what that means is like, you know, you're probably going to lose. So like, don't be afraid of taking a bagel. In round 17 or round 16 or something like that.
And I think too, and the other kind of point I make at the end of the video of like how I really want to execute this is, and I almost think about it as a sliding scale of you want to ramp up your scrolling the F down the closer we get to the season locking. So it's like right now, you know, there's so much uncertainty. You could be scrolling down, taking guys who are just stone zeros. But as we get there, you not only have more information about the depth charts, you know, like, hey, Kyren Williams is now the running back two there, but you also know how long they've been on the drafting radar. And you're like, holy cow, like I've been in 145 of these drafts this summer. And most of the time, Kyren Williams doesn't get drafted. Boom, my last five drafts, I'm slamming Kyren Williams in every single one. I don't even care if it's in the 14th round, because one, those picks aren't worth that much anyways. And two, he's barely been drafted. And that's my edge, is getting this guy. And so I'm going to push all my chips in closer to when the season starts, as opposed to if you do that now, Kyren Williams pops on the radar and it's like, okay, well now you just have an overweight exposure to a guy everyone else is drafting too.
When you said that in that video, my initial reaction was to disagree with it. Now I think you're right. Yeah. You sold me there where you don't know what percentage these guys are going to be drafted right now. So like if you take some, you know, some guy whose ADP is right on the number right now, he still might be drafted, you know, 20% of the time by the year's end. But I think, hopefully, I asked Rudman this, and they might release every month the data of the drafts that happened before. If they do that, you could kind of more and more narrow down your scroll the F down players. But yeah, that should be, you know, like Pat's site and stuff like that. That probably should be part of their package now. Like this week or this month, here's our 10 scroll the down boys.
Yeah. And people in the chat, I was actually, when I was working on this video, I was talking to Sacrilegious and what Paul and Nick are talking about in the chat. I was thinking about this as well. Is anyone tracking ADP over time to estimate percentage drafted to date? And then Nick says, feel not so hard to pull each week, pull the current fill and build an ownership estimate off that, where it is some equation of, we know what the ADP equates to as far as times drafted. And then you have some time element that's reflective of how much the contest has been filled. And someone smarter than me with a math equation could probably bake that out and take weekly updates and then spit out a percentage drafted estimation for the entire contest.
Yeah, you could do that pretty easily. One issue there would be like when Cooper Kupp gets hurt, that's clearly going to bias the data for Puka Nacua after that and stuff like that. Like, so you, if you could adjust for that, you can get that more accurate. But if they're releasing the data every month, like you don't even need to do anything. Like you just go and look at the data, you know, they'll be right on their site and be like, Dalton Schultz is drafted 85% of the time right now.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. That's all I need. And you know, I mean, like you don't even need a formula, you know, like more than that.
And again, it does go back to, if you're drafting continuously throughout the summer, you're going to have a pretty good feel for this stuff. For who's getting regularly selected, and you notice things, you're like, oh, he's getting drafted here now. I don't remember him routinely being it. And there's now tons of people tracking those general week to week ADP movements. And so my personal takeaway is I had not been practicing this nearly to the extent I should be. And it's going to be front of mind for me this year throughout the draft cycle and progressively so. And I think we can maybe have some fun too. Like Brian said, you're scroll the F down targets of the month and trying to kind of get ahead of some of those market movements.
Yeah. I also say that selfishly, because then I can use those. But I mean, that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to get whoever the scroll the F down flavor of the day is, adjust my rankings, and then just not overdo it and put too many into every draft and be more balanced.
If you guys would please head over at some point and watch that video on the Deposit Kingdom channel, if you have any interest in best ball, and it's applicable to wherever you're playing. Obviously I use underdog data, but these concepts pertain to basically any season long best ball format. So please check that out. Subscribe to that channel. I'm going to be doing a lot more weekly videos over there on the Deposit Kingdom channel. The thought is, this is a live stream channel. We're going to keep all of the produced videos there. Spend a lot of time on that. Would love it if you guys check that out. You can leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Brian, I did want to pull up. Can we do a little tease here of something that's going to be coming to the Brick 75 Draft Caddy?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let me pull this up. Tell people here.
Plus, I would mind some feedback.
Yeah, what are we looking at here?
So, yeah, this should be on the app tomorrow, hopefully. I'm just trying to rip off Poker Tracker. I'm gonna blatantly say it. Don't sue me.
You're gonna say stochastic. Yeah.
Don't. Yeah. Someone wrote in chat like he should aggregate the Badge Bros rankings. I'm like, I'm just gonna steal the Badge Bro rankings and just put it right on there, blatantly. So don't sue me, Taylor. But basically, you could see right above. I know that's Nicole's account, N Valley. Like the fueler. That's her standard deviation of her draft. So I don't know what, like, I don't want to clog up too much like data up there. So like, I was thinking like maybe one more stat. Poker Tracker usually puts like a whole bunch of stats on there. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be better to have just one or two stats and then you scroll and then you hover over that number, and then this table will pop up, which we're still, you know, working on formatting, but it's got all this, all these various data points from that user, and then the average of the top 150, which I'm just saying is, you know, a proxy of probably about right for now, is these type of numbers. So you could also scroll over your own numbers and see how you compared to the average top 50, or like how you'd want to change your game at all.
Yeah. I think this is very cool. A couple of my thoughts. You could probably get rid of average build QB, RB, wide receiver, tight end, and just accomplish it with preferred build. Cause that's going to give you, I assume that's always going to be kind of reflective of what those numbers are.
It is. Four, five, it
seven,
is.
Two.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, I didn't want to round all the way up though on those builds, because it does kind of, because like when you, it doesn't seem like it's important, but when you look at the difference between like your info and then like somebody else's, like you could, even though your average wide receivers was probably like 7.9, like you were closing in on 8, you know, and somebody else is at 7.2. That's actually a pretty big dramatic difference, even though it doesn't.
Well, that's why I would say if it has the decimal, then it would be valuable. But I think if it's round, then it wouldn't be.
That's why I was more, I wanted one just like that looks just like your display there.
Yeah.
You know, and then one with the decimal. So like, if you really want to get in that nuance, and you can't see it from the screenshot, but there'll also be a value hound ratio.
Yeah.
Which is any percent of you know, the ratio of picks of taking someone, you know, in above ADP versus below ADP. So like, if you take someone who is ADP is, you know, whatever, 192, and you take them at 200, you just got 8 points of ADP, right? That's a value pick. And so you could see, like, even though Davis was nitty, right? We all making fun of him for being nitty. His value hound ratio was actually low. So he was taking guys after ADP, even though it was in a tight range of probably 3 to 8 spots after their ADP.
Yeah.
The majority of his picks actually were after ADP. So like you could, like, let's say you're playing against Davis and then you look at his picks and you want to know if he's going to take this next guy who's at ADP and just sitting there for you, you could not confidently, but you have like a better idea that he might actually pass that guy up, even though he's a value spot, like an obvious value spot. Like no one's taking him 10 spots.
Yeah.
Like you might, if you're on a turn or something, you could like let Davis take, you know, you could plan it out, or you could plan out, you could see their builds and go like, this guy loves wide receivers, I can leave this running back for the turn, you know, on and on.
Yeah, I think this is cool. I think the stuff that would be most interesting to me or helpful is that average first pick. You know, looking at quarterback, tight end, those onesies specifically, like, can I push this guy around? Are they just a late round QB bro? I can let this quarterback come back around. Another cool tool or a feature would be if there was a way where when they deviated from the average the most, if that was almost like highlighted, like, holy cow, this is an extreme zero RB bro, or like, this is an extreme, I load up on multiple quarterbacks. Like maybe if there was some kind of like highlighter of like, because sometimes I think when they're just off of standard deviation, it's not as helpful. It's like, oh, you're just a normal drafter, but it's actually saying like, no, this is where you really take stands relative to the field.
Yeah. Okay. There's that. Total drafts isn't nothing either. You know,
no, that's very valuable.
Yeah. Like if someone's drafted 27 times, like, yeah, they're probably, you know, paying attention.
Yeah.
The standard deviation and standard deviation after 167, I think matters quite a bit, because there can be a big difference between those two as well, where somebody has like a lower standard deviation early and a high standard deviation late. That means they're probably a scroll the F down guy in the rounds, which may, you know, might affect how you want to draft in those later rounds and early. And if their standard deviation after 167 is really high and their standard deviation is low early, well, then this guy's following ADP early. So you can be sure if you're on the turn or something that like whoever's ADP here is going next. So like if I want to take him, I got to take him now. You know, there's a whole bunch of, or if it's really loose, you could actually risk it, you know, and go, I'm going to hit this. I'm going to make my stack now instead of next round, because I know this guy's going to be taken 15, 20 spots down.
Yeah. Quick question from John. What's the VPIP equivalent of draft games? That's going to be the value hound ratio, right?
I would say standard deviation. There's no like direct VPIP doesn't get VPIP would be total drafts. Really, but we like,
well, I think the live a little stuff, like how much are you just ignoring ADP and kind of drafting whoever you want versus
that's standard deviation.
Yeah. I think that then, well, what, then what's the value hound ratio?
The standard deviation with value hound ratio. So yeah, if you have a high standard deviation and your value ratio is below 50, right? So above 50 means you're taking, you're taking value all the time, right? Above 60, you're taking value all the time. And below, and also you might be auto drafting, right? Mm-hmm. So you might have, you might like notice more auto drafters if their value hound ratio is high. So if you have a low value hound ratio and a high standard deviation, this guy's way off the board.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul says, how relevant do you think last year's data is to how people are drafting this year? I bet it's pretty directionally accurate, but you know, in the same way in poker, right? Where they have the different things, like he's tight aggressive, he's loose aggressive. Like it's going to be directionally accurate probably in that way. I would find it hard to believe that people just like completely alter their overall style. But I guess to that point, when you show total drafts here or this data set, is this going to be unique to a specific contest or across all of their drafts?
Right now it's just BBM4.
Right.
Well, it'll just be for BBM4 and BBM, like those kind of BBM4-ish drafts, you know, the 12.
Yes.
I don't know if we want to combine Battle Royale, do we? It's pretty different.
The data would get all thrown off. I guess you could have a few things like standard deviation, stuff that could actually go across. But I think this kind of stuff, like average QB pick, like the data is so different with 6 versus 18 rounds.
Right. So that my thought is, we'll just wait till they have more BBM for, like if they do it every month, and then we'll just keep adding it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe that'll be a new column like this year and then overall.
Yeah.
Since the sample size is kind of small, and then BBM and then Battle Royale will have to be its own. So like when you go to a Battle Royale one, it'll have whatever their stats are for Battle Royale.
So then the other question is there, and apologies if you already said this, is there like a comment field where you could leave notes?
Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. Do you think people really want that?
Well, I know Sacrilegious has his own document where he keeps track of, builds out his own profiles and stuff, but it's like, that might actually be even additionally valuable where it's like, there's a couple guys who are already legends in like the Ship Chasing and the Bad Pros channel for how they draft, and people talk like, hey, you're in a draft with this guy, watch out, he's taken 4 QBs late. Like people are already naturally doing that. So it could be a fun thing if it's easy.
Maybe we should, what that happened with poker with me, all it was when I go back and look at, fucking donkey. This guy's the luckiest guy on the planet. Every comment, and I just stopped using it.
Yeah. No, that could certainly happen. It, you know, it would be up to the user how they want to use that instrument. It could just be a venting tool where you just say, I hate this fucking guy.
What do you think about this? I just took a screenshot of your percent drafted, you know, ADP equivalent that you just showed. What about adding that on the right here? After, you know, after all the stats, so you could kind of like just remember, oh, that's right, right around 16 is where these percentages drop off. Where do you think that's over?
Where would that display?
Just to the right. We just expand this and then put a little matrix of your stats.
But would it be, but the stats you're describing are just the macro stats for everyone, not individual to this user?
It would be literally a static matrix of what you have in your video.
Right. I think that would actually play better, kind of like, you know, where you put the Leone value buckets.
Yeah.
When we did that. I think that would make more sense in like that area of the board and not when you click a user.
Right. And that's also still on there, obviously. So the as you draft your value buckets change. If people don't know what that is, the in the Leone manifesto, and the auto drafter is based off those buckets too. So
yeah,
sweet. Yeah, that's so that's. I mean, we'll take. I'll take. It's going to be beta, right? So if people want things adjusted or the look of it, you know, just
yeah,
say it in the Discord or send it to me and we'll update it. But I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. Like that's the whole fun point of best ball, right? Is you're there live trying to figure out what the other people are going to do.
Well, I think it's a fun thing too, because I mean, there's the element of, well, you think about it this way, you know, one thing that's really helped DFS grow, and that's a fun and very useful exercise, is you review top drafters lineups and you see what they're doing. You see like they had X percent of this guy in this slate, and it tells you about how they think about a play or a style or how they want to approach a slate. I think building that out, it's good and fun for the ecosystem too. It can be helpful, but it also allows you to learn from those drafters. And you can apply it on a micro level, like, hey, this guy at the turn. But I also think it's interesting just to know, like, what are the top drafters doing? How can I learn from that?
Definitely. Yeah. And so you can like, just, that's why I put the average of the top 150 in there too, is so you can be like, oh my God, I'm nitty, you know, or, oh my God, I'm like way over. And we don't, the average, by the way, you know, this is still early we're still so early, you know, in best ball. The average might not be right, and the guys who are more loose might be right. A lot of the good players, it appears to be they appear to be pretty loose. And so you could see that on my site too, if you want to go to the individual ones. Yeah, exactly. So like you could go over yours and compare and be like, because that's what Davis is going to do.
Yeah.
I'm holding my breath. I don't know if he can actually bring himself to going down, scrolling down, you know, 10, 15 every time or so. So we'll see. But, you know, another thing somebody said, like, about, I can't remember how they paraphrased it, but like, oh, does it matter now that, you know, you have last year's data? Is it really predictive or something? Was it you or Davis told me that someone did a study on the week 17 correlation stuff, and like under 10% of people were correlating for week 17. But in our little world, it seems like everyone's doing it.
Right.
So like, I'm going to say, like, you know, I doubt people are going to be looking, you know, using the HUD and using these stats and adjusting their play. They're probably going to draft just like how they always draft, the vast majority of them. Like, they're not going to watch this.
Yeah. Yes. And one of the things too, and I think Davis would admit this, this is one of the funny things about Davis being a low key nit, is because I would actually have assumed otherwise, that Davis has all these IKB takes, all these players he likes, that the market's an idiot and he'd be scrolling down and clicking them and all of this. I think it speaks less to not having takes and more so the anchoring effect of those ADPs. And unless you are consciously pushing yourself out of that comfort zone and like drafting with purpose, which sounds so hilarious and, you know, overweight relative to drafting, but I do think that's true. And casual drafters are going to feel the anchoring effect of that ADP far more than any one of us sickos who are talking about it, to where like they cannot help themselves but lean into their tendencies over and over again.
Yeah. It's gotta be that anchoring bias.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how does Davis, his whole job is talking about sports. How does he not have takes? So like I said that on that podcast too, like he has to go with his takes and just draft them this year, you know, just, you know, and don't go crazy, but he should be more up in that, you know, 11% range, I think.
Yep.
11 standard deviation.
All right. Before we go, breaking news. Last week it was Nerdy Tenor buying a Lowell's pint glass. I just saw an email notification come through. Hopefully you don't mind the docs, but Neil Orfield now also is a proud owner of a Lowell's pint glass and some additional glasses. There is now a Scroll the F Down pint glass in the store. I got some tweeting to do. I haven't even tweeted out the video. I might go full thread, bro, share some of those, some charts. But if you guys want to be like Neil, if you want to be like Nerdy Tenor, some of the pillars, bastions of the space, you too Need to order a Lulz mug. I just absolutely deleted a seltzer in it today, Brian, and it went down smooth.
Wow. Yeah, it'll make you, remember, it'll make you dupe less.
It'll make you dupe less. All right, catch us on the podcast feed as well, although this was a visual episode, lots of various charts, graphs. So if you are listening to the audio version, you can check us out on YouTube every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Twitch as well. We do simulcast to Twitch for the Twitch heads. Brian, anything else other than people keeping an eye out for this upcoming update to the Best Ball app?
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't remember what it was. I did. I remember
ownership, MMA, something like that.
Yeah. I think MMA's this week. I'll do ownership. God damn. I can't remember. Eh, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah.
What was it? Nah, I got nothing.
All right. Brian will wake up in a cold sweat. In the middle of the night, he will remember it and he'll run to his Twitter feed and share the plug, I'm sure. Thank you guys for hanging out with us in the chat. Go check out that video on the Deposit Kingdom channel. I will pin it in the comments so you guys can easily find it. Until next time, stay safe out there.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.